Did you know there are more people with genius IQs living in China than there are people of any kind living in the United States?
That can't possibly be true.
It is.
What would account for that?
Well, first, an awful lot of people live in China, but here's my question. How do you distinguish yourself in a population of people who all got 1600 on their SATs?
I didn't know they take SATs in China.
They don't. I wasn't talking about China anymore. I was talking about me.
You got a 1600?
Yes. I could sing in an acapella group, but I can't
sing. Does that mean you actually got nothing wrong?
I could row crew or invent a $25 PC.
Or you get into a final club?
Or I get into a final club.
You know, from a woman's perspective, sometimes not singing in an acapella group is a good thing.
This is serious.
On the other hand, I do like guys who row crew.
Well, I can't do that.
I was kidding.
Yes, I got nothing wrong in the test.
Have you ever tried?
I'm trying right now.
To row crew?
To get into a final club. To row crew? No, are you like, whatever, delusional?
Maybe it's just sometimes you'd say two things at once. I'm not sure which one I'm supposed to be aiming at.
It's already way too hot.
Yes. I briefly ran my AC.
I was contemplating wearing smaller clothing, but...
Smaller? Yeah.
Smaller.
Smaller.
No, less covering?
Like midriff revealing? Like, what do you mean?
I could do that.
Yeah.
No, I don't really own anything smaller. I'm wearing like a tank top and some shorts. It's too hot.
Mm-hmm.
Sweaty is what I'm saying.
Yes.
I know you like to be informed when I'm sweaty.
I don't like that at all. Ever. You know what you could do? You could have a Facebook status update that says that that would be a thing you could do.
I'm not an avid Facebook user.
Really?
It's convenient time though, I guess, because they just killed my favorite Facebook client, Paper, last week.
Yeah. It's been cut.
Yeah. It was the only legible way to read Facebook, in my opinion.
You didn't hear what I said? It's been cut.
Oh, yeah, I gotcha. It was a pun.
The papers,
it was paper pun.
Yep.
Rock paper pun.
Mm-hmm. Rochambeau you for it. So yeah, I don't like Facebook either, as I've established on other occasions where I've mentioned Facebook or had Facebook mentioned around me, and I've been like, nope. So that's the thing really remarkable there. And it is icky and weird, and I think that might also be wrapped up in my feelings about the movie that's about it, and how unlikable and creepy I think a certain social network founder might be. But
well, it's a good thing this movie is a 100% accurate documentary about the actual events and characters and line for line dialogue of the events surrounding the creation of Facebook.
Yeah,
it's none of those things.
No, because. I would have to be really surprised then that anyone would talk like that about the thing. The thing? What thing? The thing.
Would you like to complain about Aaron Sorkin now and get it out of the way, or you just want to do it all the way throughout?
Oh, it's gonna be forever. I could just bring it up every now and then, just like how he does the thing. The thing? You know, the thing. Just characters just talking past each other and being like, yeah, that, yeah, that, yeah, that. And it's just like, why are we doing this over and over and over again?
In moments of tension and passion between characters, human beings actually speak like that to a certain extent. But yes, it is...
excessive?
It's a little hyper-realistic in certain instances. But I don't find it jarring at all watching this movie. I actually quite enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, part of the reason why we're doing this is because it's one of your favorite movies ever.
It is one of my favorite movies, yeah.
Yeah, because if it was just you and David Fincher, you'd switch your relationship status to something else, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah, I would totally be in a relationship with David Fincher.
No. Please, no.
It's complicated, though, because he doesn't know.
No, but anyway, I just don't... I don't really, like... love everything that David Fincher does, and that's kind of controversial thing to say because he is well regarded by a lot of filmmakers and by a lot of people who are involved in film, by a lot of film critics even like his films. So by me saying meh, it's kind of a little bit of a jerk move there, and so I kind of want to apologize a little bit because, you know, it's not that I think that he makes bad films, except for Alien 3, but it's just that, I don't know, it's just they don't always speak to me. Like, what was that one with San Francisco and the porcelain clown thing? The game? Something?
Oh, the game.
Yeah.
Well, you said San Francisco. I thought Zodiac.
No, well, it was the other one in San Francisco. I didn't see Zodiac. Jake Gyllenhaal's a little bit of a turnoff, to be perfectly honest.
He's probably the weak point in that movie, but it is a good movie. Mm. It's not as good as this one, but it is a good movie.
It's a killer movie. Okay, but this movie, I mean, I like it, and I liked it when I saw it many, many years ago. But the fact that I didn't ever seek it out again after that is probably part of the reason why I don't, like, super love it. You know, it just didn't, like, connect on every level. And I think, you know, it's not necessarily him as the director, but mostly maybe just that the people who are involved, the characters, if you will, are awfully unlikable in many ways. And so it doesn't really, like... It's unpleasant to sort of sit through many of these interactions that these people have. Also, can I just get this out of the way and say down with the patriarchy? Because what the F? Like, this is just like, ugh. Just men are terrible to women all the time in this movie. And it reflects real life where men are terrible to women.
A number of times, yes. They are bad, and it does reflect real life. And I think that's kind of the draw, at least for me. I'm not going to try and speak for why other people like this movie or Fincher, is that it does kind of reflect real life in a way that allows it to suck you in or feel more realistic than a lot of other movies where characters aren't as deep or realistic. Or, you know, there are hints of actual humanity, as bad as it may be, throughout this entire thing that really just keep me engaged most of the time. And, you know, all of the characters are, despite the fact that they all speak very quickly and they're speaking from kind of a similar voice, I think they're all very different characters, and you can see who they are and what they want and all this sort of stuff. And it's just one of the things I've often said about Fincher movies, and I agree that not all of his movies are 100% home runs, but there are just, you know, things about them that are fantastic. But, you know, they don't stand by themselves as, like, the greatest thing in history. But his movies often, and his characters often, leave you with that sort of, like, bad feeling when you leave the theater. And I think that that is a reflection of the realism of the human beings in the story. And that is what I appreciate about it. Like, this movie does not have a happy ending. It doesn't even come close to having, like, a, hey, we wrapped everything up and it's all resolved and now it's a happy ending. It's just kind of like, well, crap. We're here now, and that's very much the way life can be. And I think, you know, the details and the intricacies of the stories told in that sort of context are very interesting and attractive to me.
Well, okay.
Please don't psychoanalyze me for saying all of that.
No, you're not a horrible person. I've met you. You're fine.
Sweet.
But the you mentioned the ending. Like, just as an example of some of the structural elements of this narrative that I'm not really sure are actually reflective of real life would be the fixation on Erica Albright, which is something that carries throughout the film as his main motivation for Facebook. I don't know if that is necessarily accurate.
Not in the slightest. No, it is a manifestation specifically for this film.
And so then why do that then? I mean, I understand it sort of rounds it out, and you can be like, oh, we end where we began. You know, it was the best of books, the worst of books. But it was, it there's just something sort of lazy about it where it's like, yeah, he's so obsessed with Erica. And it's like, but that's not really like what I get from Facebook or from Mark Zuckerberg or from any of that. Like I don't know if that's because, you know, I've read more about Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg and their business practices and evilness, but it doesn't seem that hanging this all on his fixation on one woman rings true either in the narrative or in real life, and I just find that so strange, and I found it strange again when I watched it and I just finished the ending and it was just like, yeah, he's refreshing the thing in Conqueror and KDE desktop thing. I'm assuming he's running Red Hat Linux or something. I have no idea what's going on. But, like, it's just weird. It's very strange.
Yeah, in terms of ending the film on that particular note, I mean, they needed something there. And, you know, it's not the strongest place to put it. I do like that there was at least a little bit of the callback to it when he runs into her later at that restaurant. But, I mean, Erica in the beginning there and sort of later serves to illustrate Mark's sort of isolated feeling of being an outsider and unworthy and how he has to fight for everything that he wants. And he's always battling something, whether he should be or not. And, you know, it's kind of run through the narrative of the lawsuits too, where he's, you know, they say at the end there, Rashida Jones says, you must really hate them. And cause it appears that like he's fighting as hard as he can because he really just wants to put people in their place and smack them off their pedestal and say like, no, you are not as good as you think you are. And look what I have earned. And, you know, stop trying to take credit for what I've done and that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's really all trying to reveal his insecurity. And they do that at the end there by tying it up with Erica. But it is, you know, I mean, it could have been all the more bleak and just sort of like left him sitting there staring at like a command line after he has his little chat with Rashida Jones. But, you know, that would have been slightly less satisfying. And they needed, you know, something to put the graphics over at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what the ending is really about, is something to put graphics over. Speaking of graphics, can we talk about a poster?
Talk about what was that?
The poster.
Sure. Oh, before we do that, one last thing on the ending. Once you get to the ending of this and you see, like, the little description about, like, you know, the Winklevoss twins got their settlement and signed an NDA, and Eduardo got an undisclosed amount, and, you know, whatever, it's worth whatever. It's like, it's interesting to look at this entire movie in retrospect and go, like, if all of these people gave testimony and then signed NDAs, and then this book was written by a person who I believe only got the story from Eduardo, how much of this could possibly even be close to true? Because A, they're not allowed to, and B, this is all slanted from his side of the story. But that's just one more way to sort of, like, ruin the whole thing for you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I deeply suspect every aspect of the way that this unfolds. But, you know, it's you have to take certain liberties if you don't have access to the information. And then it becomes something else. But I do wonder, though, like how it really connects to some other things. Like there's a reference in the movie where he says, "Oh, well, did you just tell me a parable?" It's sort of like, well, this movie is sort of a parable about, you know, somebody who gets rich and like screws over people to show them who's boss and that he's the real boss, etc. But he's not really the real boss. He's really lonely and he's not really an asshole. He just wants everybody to think he is. He just wants everybody to think he's the coolest guy. And so
he's tired of being stepped on, and this is literally the only way he knows how to express himself and leverage his position of power, which is recently acquired.
But you could put that story on like tons of things. I don't know if it necessarily needed to be on Facebook, but
no, and that's why, you know, when they talk about this movie and any of the behind the scenes stuff, they say this is not a movie about Facebook, which it's really not. This is really about some friends and some backstabbing and business and that sort of stuff, and just how all that gets in the way and personalities have conflict and differences, and it just happens to be told amongst the backdrop of some kids that invented Facebook.
Yeah. And
you want to talk about the poster?
Yeah, I don't like the poster. Just text on faces. Can we stop with that?
Well, this was one of the first few text on faces ones.
I don't think it was. I mean, I think that the trend started just shortly before this. So, you know.
Well, you know what this is, though? The poster.
What?
It's Futura.
Yes.
All the way back in 2010, they were doing it.
Also,
still a big deal.
So I guess we'll just start at the beginning of the movie. We get the whole thing with Erica and Mark talking at the bar, and it's the Sorkin dialogue, the snappy back and forth, and neither really knows what the other one is talking about because they keep changing subjects and blah, 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 and he's horrible to her. And, you know, he's supposed to be in terms of the narrative. it's not a mistake on the audience's part to read too much into that. Like he really is, he's supposed to be a total jerk in the scene, and he's unpleasant and completely rude to her, and you completely identify with Erica's position that she is correct in this, and he has poor social skills, which is the real condemnation. And all throughout, I'm curious as to why they played it this certain way with that, but whatever. He's got these sort of brooding moments and disconnected speech pattern thing going on, and it's like, you know, I've seen Mark Zuckerberg talk, and it wasn't quite like that. I mean, he's not like an eloquent speaker by any means. It's definitely played differently here, like almost like he has a certain affected manner of speech that I don't see manifest.
No, he's very different than the human being Zuckerberg, and I think at least a lot of that was intentional. There's very little actual callback to the real Mark Zuckerberg. I think there's like one specific line of dialogue that I can cite that I know he actually said in real life. And you know, aside from setting him up to sort of look like that, and you know, he wears the same clothes that Zuckerberg wore around the time, and he drinks the same beer, which is apparently something they researched.
Must have been really hard to get their hands on that wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those Adidas flip-flops with the Velcro, these days they don't really have the Velcro on the top. But yeah, they did make a decision to make him a different character, and, you know, character for the movie's purposes, because, again, this whole thing with Erica is entirely made up, too. But, you know, in spite of the fact that he's awkward and he cares way too much about final clubs and Erica doesn't really care or understand it, and he gets miffed by that and then sort of starts spiraling into poor social skills, you know, the scene does serve to set up sort of the basic structure of what we're talking about here, who the people are that he admires, who are the people he wants to be, and the things he might consider trying to do in order to impress these people. And you get a feel for both his personality and sort of the world he lives in just by the examples he's throwing around. You know, he's got a 1600 on his SAT. He's a smart guy. He can't impress, you know, the people in the final clubs because he doesn't have money, or, you know, he's trying to figure out how to get in with them. They lead to a better life. You know, you can be president because so he's got to get in and all this fun stuff. And Erica's just like, what? You're insane. He's like, well, I'm, you know, driven and motivated to a fault, clearly. But the scene, aside from being amusing between the two characters and revealing his character, does actually set up a lot about the movie.
Yeah. And this scene leads to her leaving him, and she makes it very clear in quite what I think is probably one of the better lines of dialogue. It's not because he's a nerd, because he's smart. It's because he's just a terrible human being. Again, we're talking about the character in the film.
Very careful to refer to the character of Mark Zuckerberg and all the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. So I for anyone who might be listening along to this podcast, I'm not talking about Mark Zuckerberg because I just couldn't be bothered to care about the real person.
To avoid confusion, when we say Mark Zuckerberg, let's say it's Mark with a C and the real person is Mark with a K, so the audience can tell the difference of who we're talking about. We're not talking about Mark Zuckerberg. We're talking about Mark Zuckerberg.
Well, what if we called him Marky Z?
Let's not do that, because I don't want to say that.
You want to call him Marky Z?
Marky Z?
Marky Z.
Marky Z.
Yeah. Or you can do Mark Easy, I guess. But that sounds Mark-E-Z, like a small business that's in a strip mall. But
that's what I was going to say. When he grows up, he could start Z Burgers in Boston.
Oh. they have that exchange, and she has that nice line of dialogue that I like, where she defends her position and that, you know, he looks down on her in a rather horrible way, and that, you know, this is why she's pushing away from him and not because of his intellect or because he's a nerd. And so
she crushes his ego quite succinctly, and it ruins him for a while, and
movie.
Yeah, basically for his whole life, according to this character. But like, you know, the little he's so caught off guard, that sort of like half step he does where he like goes to take a drink of beer and he's like, nope, I don't want that. I don't know what to do with my body anymore. I'm going to get up and flee now.
Yeah. And he goes and he fires off his live journal.
By the way, fun fact, 99 takes, 3 camera setups, first 2 days of shooting, bar scene.
For the bar scene?
Mm-hmm.
If I was a Rooney Mara, I would have quit.
No, Eisenberg and Mara said they loved it because they got to explore their characters. And, you know, again, as the first thing you shoot to get into your character and to spend that much time, like, going through the details of it, that's great for an actor to sort of explore that kind of stuff. Anyway.
So this was also chronologically then the first thing they shot.
This was the first thing they shot, yeah.
Okay, just checking, because I don't know any of these fun facts, so feel free to inform me.
Also, you 99. Know, best screenplay Oscar, best score Oscar, right? Going throughout.
Yeah. I mean, I like the score.
I love it.
I mean, love's a strong word. I own
it. I think
I've
got 3 songs from the score in my regular, like, 4-star iTunes rotation.
There are a few bright spots, and then there's a lot of ambientness that is nice, but...
Yeah, I mean, it is Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ambientness I don't find particularly noteworthy, but...
Well, do you not like these sort of, like... Again, before we get to his live journal stuff, you know, the opening credit scene as he's taking his sad lap back to his dorm room where you've got the soft piano playing and those weird sort of deep warbly noises he runs through the campus. That's a good song. Sort of.
I couldn't even hum it. Like, it doesn't stick with me at all. Yeah.
Oh, I can hum it to you. You want me to hum it to you?
You go ahead.
I'm not going
to
do that.
And no, you just said it. You have to do it now. That's how the rules work.
No, I'm not a dancing bear.
Oh. Okay.
I don't have a hat or a motorcycle to ride around.
All right.
But I do like that they...
Dancing
that
bears don't sing, though.
Well...
They dance. You'd be a singing bear.
I was just going to hum.
Oh.
But I do appreciate that they
used
the opening credit
sequence. Well, you could be a humming bear, but I think it'd be better if you were a humming bird.
Oh, God. Oh, my. You're just going to go with puns until we stop, aren't you?
You know, I'm just going to keep flapping. All right, so...
sad music over long, depressing run back to his dorm room over the credits. So they actually used that to sort of let him breathe and let him stew. So when he shows back up at his dorm angrily... and throwing his beer bottle cap and start blogging, you can see that it's just been, like, seething in his brain for the entire trip back to his dorm room.
Yeah, and he writes one of the dumbest blog posts that you could write.
Interestingly, at least a portion of that is true. You can't find the whole blog post anymore, but the opening line is at least true, where he calls her a bitch. That's the opening line of his original blog post back when he did the face mash thing.
Yeah, well... These startup guys, they have a real way with women.
It was a college student. What was he? He was like a college sophomore or junior at this time?
I think he was a sophomore, according to that line later when they meet the Winklevi. Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that there are no archived blog posts of things that I said when I was 19 years old. So.
Oh, no. But at the same time, even in that era, like he knew he was being a jerk. Like that it wasn't like a surprise.
He was hurt, he was drinking, and he was lashing out.
Yeah.
As you do.
Well, except that other part where you don't apologize and then you say I'm sorry if I offended you, big city apology.
No, I was just stating a fact.
Yeah.
To a different college. The way he tries to backpedal and, like, he goes so quickly from backpedaling to self-rationalization that, like, he clearly believes his backpedal as the truth. Like, no, it's, I wasn't trying to offend you by saying you're dumb. You go to a different college. That's why you're not going to meet these people. But then so quickly afterwards, he's like, no, you also because you go to that college, you don't have to study because it's not a hard college. We do learn a lot about him in the first couple minutes.
That he's a charmer.
Not a charmer. They save that for Timberlake.
And he's a deep thinker. So he comes up with...
brain is immediately connected to his mouth. There's no filter.
Yeah. Well, he immediately comes up with this plan to to do a face smash and to rank all of the women and... All of the stuff, like hot or not, but you know, we're gonna do it this way, and it'll be a ranking algorithm that I'll get from this one guy, and then I'll put it together. And then because
By the way,
this storm doesn't.
Before I saw this in 2010, I had completely forgot that hot or not was a thing. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Oh my god. Yeah. You didn't actually, did you partake in that? Was that a thing people could partake in?
No, I did not.
That was a thing people could like upload their stuff to, right?
Theoretically, I don't know how much of that was uploaded and how much of that was just angry nerds on the internet going, here's a photo of somebody I don't like, and then putting it on the internet.
That's right. Yeah. I feel like I know some people that either put up their own photo or like put up photos of people they know.
Yeah.
Like, don't quote me on that. I couldn't be certain. I may be making that up.
Oh, okay. Whatever you say, Aaron Sorkin. Wink, wink. Thank nudge, you. Nudge. So,
allegedly.
So he then starts rambling about how he's going to hack into the SSHs over the thing to the thing, and the 20 requests, and then it doesn't return anything, and blah, 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 blah.
Despite the fact that it's very, like, technobabbly nonsense, it's some of the least dumb technobabbly nonsense that's in movies.
Yeah, but it doesn't serve much of a purpose, really. But then that's immediately followed up by the other technobabbly nonsense of them calling the security guy for Harvard at night, and he wakes up and you see the porcelain sink that is in his bathroom. So it's an important part of the shot. But
by the way, while he's hacking, it's intercut with the montage of the people at the actual final club having one of their big fancy parties with drugs and girls and booze and all kinds of, look at how fancy and rich we are and our awesome parties and stuff. And the intercutting is fantastic. The editing in this movie is great. The music in this particular scene is one of my favorites. And the worlds couldn't be more different. And eventually they come together at the end there where the guy at the final club is actually on his website. And you see the girl at the party walk up and go like, hey, that's my roommate. What's going on here? What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Things spread quickly. And I think it's one of the more interesting ways to see, not to use a horrible term, but like the virality of a thing, like the virality of a internet thing through a college and a group of friends. And it's so well assembled. Like the first night was like 19-20 minutes all the way up until the administrative board. That stuff is so well put together. I just love watching that part of the movie.
I like the editing. It's snappy. You can totally tell what's happening. And it doesn't lose your interest in something that might otherwise be considered rather boring, which is people typing on computers and people pointing at things that are on computers and describing them to other people.
I mean, you know, they're super hip and with it, and they use grease pens to write algorithms on Windows.
Yeah, yeah.
Did this win Best Editing Oscar too? I feel like it did.
You tell me, man.
Pretty sure it did.
Okay.
Check that out. Angus Young, didn't he win?
Sure.
Anyway,
they have the whole thing where they wake up the guy, and then the guy goes. You know, we go from the, I guess, not so bad technobabble to the bad technobabble of like, oh, this is more than like the Super Bowl. We're gonna have to, you know, it's gonna take everything down. It's gonna take Harvard down, man. And it's not super convincing, that dialogue. I mean, you need it there to set up the fact that he took the network down, but it's not.
And I guess the implication is that he downloaded all of these photos from the various Facebooks and then hosted the website on his laptop, because that would be the only reason all of that connectivity was going through his network switch there in the house.
It doesn't really make a ton of sense, though, because how many people could be possibly connecting based on him writing it on the window to his dorm room? And then if it's just some photos on the local network, not over the internet, and they're not doing any sort of page fetch requests where they're building a page, then how would it, which would use processor power, then what exactly are they overloading? I don't know. I mean, I assume this is one of the factual things they took, that he actually did crash this thing. I have no idea. But the way that it is framed in here, it's like, well, this is kind of strange, because I don't know how you would technically do that based on the things you're saying, but sure, it happened. The important thing is the review board where they discuss his punishment, and he very flippantly says he's already apologized. Fortunately, through the magic of editing, we'd have to sit through the other ones, and we just get to the point where he says that they should be, happy with him. They should be thanking him because he did something amazing. The guy, the security guy, is all like, "Nope, you know, our network is top notch." And he's like, "Well, it took you 4 hours to find me, and I had written it on my window, LOL, mm-hmm. in your face, brah."
And then I think it's even right before the ad board scene, or is it right after? But I like how it goes from like his hacking and he puts up this website and like, "Oh, look at us, we took down the network," and it's like cut to deposition room with lawyers. It's like, "Oh, okay. We're jumping ahead a little bit here. This is kind of a change of pace." And then shortly thereafter, you see the Winklevosses and Divya Narendra like reading the newspaper article talking about like, "Ooh, this is our guy. We're going to hire him to do our thing." Cut to a different deposition room where they have a lawyer now. They're staring at him. It's like, oh, that didn't go well, clearly. And then I assume the movie is going to backtrack and sort of tell us what happened here.
I really like the intercutting with the different... are they depositions or is it arbitration? Like, I think it might be arbitration. But they have these meetings with the lawyers. I like how distinctive it is. And even though some of these characters are appearing multiple times in these different cases, as well as in the past flashbacks here through the story, that you can instantly tell when things where things are in the story. You don't lose track of the linear flow because things are moving forwards in all three of the cases there.
And one of the benefits of having actual lawyers is as they read charges and timeline of events from their documents, it serves as exposition, which helps us out a little bit. Because we need to know some of these things and some of the timelines of these things, then we can go, you know, actually watch the scenes of important stuff. But it does help us to understand, like, well, they had a relationship very briefly and it went south and here's kind of why. And then let's go watch some of that.
Yeah. Well, also, it serves to help with the transitions because the lawyer can read one of the emails then inside of the arbitration room. Then he can read one of them over the flashback footage and then one of the characters can be reading the arbitration email inside of the scene in real time of when he would have read it. So it can help us move from one scene to another as well. So it's a very good tool, and I think it's used well. And,
yes. And while that is helpful, though, that's like the point where you are right. This is a very oddly structured movie, and it has probably the most ill-defined structure. Like, you can't just go like, "Oh, there's the first and second and third act break right there." It's very sort of amorphous and just kind of all over the place and just becomes sort of a chaotic mess of events that occurred. And you get filled in on the backstory and then there's barely any resolution except at the very last bit there with the graphics. But it completes the story in its sort of circular fashion where we sort of know the ending right up front. And, we just get to see it unfold with all of the drama and character interaction as the movie goes on.
Yeah. And I really like the cinematography in this movie. It's worth mentioning because you can make these arbitration scenes pretty boring. But they look like nice rooms. Of course, the flashbacks all look great. The color grading's a little too yellow for me, but whatever. They have
it was 2003. Everything was orange back then.
2010.
No, I mean like when the story.
Oh yes, they were doing a period piece on the color grading.
They were doing a period piece all the way back to 2003.
Dear.
But you can imagine how different this movie would be like post iPhone kind of stuff. That's like you can't do this kind of thing. It's too different.
Yeah. Well, they could do the story of Instagram. You get round up all these same people for the acquisition of Instagram. You have Mark Zuckerberg. You could have Jesse Eisenberg reprise his role as Mark Zuckerberg. You can have the Instagram guy played by, I don't know, someone, an actor. Just
I don't even
one.
Know who the Instagram guy is.
Yeah, it's that guy. Jeff or Kevin or whatever. I don't know his name.
You sure you're not thinking of the Snapchat guy?
No. But they sold it for, you know, $4 billion, which was a much bigger number than some of the other numbers featured in this film. But the they don't really address smartphones, which is a problem for Facebook itself for a long time. Major criticism is that it wasn't thinking about mobile. But the Facebook phone solved all of that. That was after this movie, though. And it didn't solve all of that. That was a joke. But
I love when they announced their phone version, people asked about iPads, and Mark Zuckerberg said the iPad is not a mobile internet device.
Yeah. I think they still just have like a blown-up web view or something for the iPad.
Probably.
Oh, man. iPads. What a waste, right?
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah.
People who use iPads are terrible, too.
You can't do real social networking on an iPad.
Anyway, back to the movie.
So, they have arbitration, and they cut back to the thing, and we get the Winklevosses who read about the thing from the other guy reading about the thing, and I don't even remember that guy's name. And they
his character name?
Yes, all of
Divya
it.
Narendra.
Yes. And we get both of our army hammers as the Winklevosses, and they did a lot of trickery to make that all work with clever wipes and
and tracking markers on faces and lots of visual effects.
Yeah, I know. That was a joke. So they actually like had another actor, and then they would just like do another take with the performance, and then glue his face onto the other performance. That way, they wouldn't have to do old school split screen stuff where people aren't crossing frame or anything. I don't know if you recall the Parent Trap or something like that, where there's just like a big matte line in the middle, or even in some of the better circumstances where there isn't a matte line in the middle, and then they just can't cross frame, so it looks like there's an invisible barrier. Those are always totally fun.
Yeah, that's great.
And then one of
the other guy was Josh Pence, by the way, who comes up to the bathroom when the ladies are inside and has the bag hat on. That's the guy who plays the other Army Hammer.
Oh, I mean, sure. But just give me two Army Hammers. That's all I want. But then they have, and this is before Lone Ranger. Which really launched his career.
He can do it himself. He's 6'5", 220, and there's two of him.
I don't like that line at all.
Why not? That was a good line.
It's unnatural. Nobody would say that.
It's a clever line.
It's clever if you're a writer and you're like, look how clever I am. I realized I have two characters that have the same physical attributes. Not that Aaron Sorkin talks like that, but...
Well, Aaron Sorkin's in this movie, too. He's one of the worst actors in the movie.
Oh, what does he do, exactly?
He's the guy behind the desk who goes, I'm sorry, what sound is he making? Is that like a tisk?
Oh.
That was Aaron Sorkin.
Well, good job, Aaron.
Yeah. Apparently the director made him do that. He didn't want to.
Oh. Why? Does David Fincher, like, you need to be in your own movie? This is very strange. Is David Fincher in here?
No. David Fincher also made Aaron Sorkin direct the last scene that they shot, which is just, it was a plate of people clicking through the Face Mash website.
So they shot one of the first scenes at the end of the production schedule?
Yeah, one of the like 70 different cutaways to random nerds in like a dorm room, like talking to each other and clicking the mouse.
Does he have a DGA card? Can you do that?
I guess he does now, but there's a nice little behind the scenes. He said Fincher just like jokingly said, you're going to direct this, and then he just like left.
That Fincher, what a joker. So they have the Winklevi, and they do their thing about how they're going to get him to work on the Harvard connection.
Don't forget they row crew, which is also a reference to that opening scene.
Yes. Yes, because she really cares about rowing crew, and he's really upset about people who row crew now because they're a threat to him and Erica. It's not good writing.
That was a slightly awkward callback sort of tie-in like theme. Like
there is no way that realistically in the world that ever crossed anyone's mind that Erica ever said that, or that Mark Zuckerberg in real life ever acknowledge that is some sort of a reason why he would seek vengeance upon the Winklevi. But it comes up here, and it's just sort of like, really, Aaron? Really? That's, you're going to write that in there? You have all these other things you could write, but you gotta like tie that one in. It's like, you could just not like them. It's fine. It doesn't need to be because he's a threat to, you know, his woman. It's no, poorly it's just, conceived.
It's a little wink to the audience, like, hey, remember that thing?
No, they're two big winks.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
265, 220 winks.
Yeah. So the...
Again, this is the people that he's contending with. In that opening scene, he's talking about the people who are qualified to be part of the final clubs and who are going to succeed in life because they're part of these cool clubs that get everybody ahead, and, you know, people who row crew and, you know, rich people and stuff. And it's like, oh, here we are face to face. And you want my help now?
I am so happy I went to an art school. So they go through this whole thing of like trying to like meet with Zuckerberg and have him come back to the bike room because he's not a member of the Porcupines or whatever, he can't come in. And they have their conversation about their idea for MySpace / yeah. Friendster. As Zuckerberg points out, their idea is not terribly original and has already been done. And basically the spin that they have on it is the exclusivity. So the only thing that Mark Zuckerberg really could be accused of stealing here is the idea of exclusivity through Harvard, because that was what launched the application. But you know, as he points out, he didn't take any code, he didn't do any of this other stuff. But this is where he got that is definitely the source in the movie of where he got the idea. Then he goes off and he goes back to talk to his buddy, first British Spider-Man. About how he's going to need financing for his thing, because British Spider-Man has the money.
Yes, and one which we also learned in the opening scene. Don't forget. But you know, in addition to, you know, going to first British Spider-Man for money, he gets another little hole in his ego when he finds out that Eduardo, who, you know, has no chance of getting in, even though he knows how to make money, is getting into, you know, the entry level of the final club, which, you know, takes a moment and sort of knocks him off his train of thought for a moment. And then they go outside in the cold, which wasn't actually cold enough to see your breath. That's CG breath, but it was still cold.
Oh, it was? It was so subtle.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it was not subtle. I really hate the CG breath that's in this movie. This scene and in the hazing scene, it's just abysmal. And then there's that other scene that they have after they get out of the study hall. Again, they do it. And then again, that time they decided to add CG snow. And it was just mm-hmm. like, come on, guys.
I wonder if they recycled it, though, because I believe the rumor was on Fight Club they recycled some of the CG breath from Titanic. So I wonder if they brought this from somewhere else.
Well, I'm sure there's like an elements library and they just tracked it over their faces and dissolved it on and off. But mm-hmm. I don't like it. I think it's really distracting. I don't think it sells the idea of them being in the cold. I would have rather just had them shivering and not had cold breath.
Well,
if you really want them to have cold breath, shoot it in a meat locker. I don't care. You're shooting in winter.
Non-visual effects yeah. artists, by the way, probably didn't have as big a problem with it as you did. But
well, it makes me grumpy. So they have their conversation, and you know, he's gotten to the first phase of the flaming birds, not the porcupines. And so he's really jealous of that, because the flaming birds is one of the things they talked about with Erica at the beginning of the film, where she asked, you know, if it was easy to get into that one or not, or if any of the others.
Well, the porcupine was the best of the best, though.
Yeah, because the Roosevelt. Which Roosevelt? The writing.
Oh, the writing is fantastic. You shut up.
Okay. I shut up? You shut up? Who shut up? Who
shut
shuts up?
We shut up?
Yeah. You shut anyway. Up? I shut up?
See, this is why we're not good actors. We can't do it. We talk over each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can't do it because literally the dialogue for talking over one another is written in such a way that it metronomes back and forth, and it is impossible to talk over one another inside of the actual film.
You should actually read the screenplays, particularly like the first, what is it, like 9 pages, which is just that opening scene. It's amazing, like down to the syllable, what is actually written in that script. Like, you know, hiccups where he like starts a word and then backtracks and then starts another word. It's all actually in the script, which is quite goofy. And yes, I'm sure it has been slightly massaged since the movie came out because, you know, they have to post the shooting script for the Oscars and all that stuff, but it's kind of crazy the level of detail.
Yeah, and also, you know, after 99 takes, I'm sure it's not exactly what he wrote. But
no, it is. They don't let him change words very specifically. Okay. Aaron Sorkin was on set for the whole thing to make sure they didn't change words.
No, maybe that's why it took 99 takes. But
maybe. Ask Rye how many takes I make people do when they like miss like one tiny little word.
Wasn't it like 23 or something, and it was like 5 in the morning?
No, I think we averaged 27 per setup, because that's just kind of the thing you do. You get into a rhythm. You got to get the performance. You got to get the dialogue right. You got to get all of it right. And especially when it's this complex. And I mean, they at least had the benefit in that opening scene of shooting two cameras on each character at the same time. So the overlap was actually real, and they could sort of like cut back and forth easily. But yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah. I mean, if I did more than 20 takes of something, I would just throttle you behind that butcher counter. But
that's
so,
because you don't enjoy acting.
No,
these people enjoy acting.
I don't enjoy the craft.
I mean, but by this time, people who sign up for a Fincher film know what they're getting into.
Yeah. So, are you going to take a Sorkin's $90 Sorkin class? Learn how to walk and talk.
I haven't paid for it yet. It's not learn how to walk and talk. I'm tempted because, you know, I've been looking at those masterclasses for a while, because there was one for a while Dustin Hoffman had one. I'm just curious what his advice for actors was. But now that they have him there, and then there's another actor teaching. Oh, it's Kevin Spacey or something. I don't know. I'm tempted. Anyway, moving on.
He sounds so tempted. But they have the thing where he gets the money, and then they go back and forth about the emails and like the delays and the Harvard connection and all the excuses. And like I said earlier, I like how they weave in the emails with the transition as a transitional element for this. And they finally get to the end of the sequence there where he goes, okay, so ready to go live. And then it's like, all right, now I'm going to say a bunch of stuff about how I don't think their idea is very good the last minute, but right before they can't do anything about it, and then I'm going to pull the trigger.
Don't forget that Jurassic Park Joe Mazzello comes in and offers the advice about putting the relationship status on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, he's been working for a month straight. He's tired. He's exhausted. He finally finishes the last little tweak. They make it go live. He sort of strong-arms Andrew Garfield into giving him the emails for all the fancy rich people at his Phoenician club or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he posts it, and then he falls asleep in his chair.
Yep.
And that's basically at the time when, you know, the lawyers are discovering basically that he was leading them on. He did no work for them, and he was just sort of placating them with emails. And then at the end there, he's just kind of like, I'm done with you guys, because I don't need to string you along anymore. I'm just sort of like, I got my own thing now. So bye.
Yep. And but then he makes the claim that when he got the cease and desist, he went to the local campus person or whatever and got them to say the thing about how there were problems. But, you know, it didn't come up before then. Big deal.
I know what I can do to sort of cover myself when they come back with a real lawyer. I can write a notarized letter in response saying all of these things that I pretended I was saying all along.
What a rube.
But I mean, again, yeah. that scene, more than the plot, serves to show the, now that there are like actual stakes between him and Andrew Garfield, like what the relationship is like. And he's very defensive, and he, like, you know, he sort of cowers in sort of the, like, the child role when Andrew Garfield is kind of scolding him and giving him the, is there anything you need to tell me line or whatever. But like, you know, he very clearly resents it. There's like anger in his eyes, but it's like, you know, we're friends or whatever, so like he still has a little bit of that trust there, and, you know, like, don't worry about it, we'll be fine, we're buddies.
The buddy system forever and ever, and no problems. But
by the way, it's I hate to say this, and it sort of pains me to say anything like bad about this movie, but I think Andrew Garfield might be my least favorite part of this movie, because while there are parts of this movie where he is very believable and very good, there are times, sometimes, I don't know, there are like one or two instances where his accent is like weird, and then there are other times, I mean, because, you know, he's a British guy playing a Brazilian who sounds American, but he's also just like, there are times where his emotions kind of go in a direction that I don't quite believe.
Yeah, but, well, watch Amazing Spider-Man. It's exactly the same thing.
I've seen it. It's just more sass.
He I don't know what it is. He gets very in his head about what he's doing. One of the scenes that always sticks out to me is when he gets that second wax-sealed letter from the Phoenicians underneath the door. And he goes to open it, and then he does like this weird thing where he like spins around and he like holds his finger up in the air and he like bites his lip. And it's just like, I wouldn't necessarily think that anyone would do that unconsciously necessarily in that situation with no one present. I think that's the sort of thing an actor thinks that somebody might think that they would do. And then just
dancing like nobody was watching.
Yeah. Bite your lip and spin around like nobody's watching. But that just is just sort of not, it stretches credulity that anyone opens an envelope in that manner. And that is all I have to say about that.
Yeah. I don't want to say he's bad in this movie or he like ruins it or anything, but he does, I do feel like there are times where he's not playing on the same level as Eisenberg, which is very difficult because Eisenberg is very serious about his acting and he's very good at playing a sort of neurotic, insecure person. So being in the same scene with him, he's clearly going to be the lesser of the two actors in any given performance.
Also, you got JT,
who is not bad in this movie.
Justin Timberlake, who is not bad.
I don't mean to say he's not bad. I mean to say he is not a bad actor in this movie. He plays a smarmy, entitled, fake, sophisticated, formerly rich person very well.
Yeah, it's,
which is again
must have been tough.
It's been pointed out many times. It's ironic that he's playing the guy that ruined the music industry while he is a musician.
Oh, I never heard anybody mention that before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess we could skip to that. They have the thing where they're going to expand out, and Eduardo's like, yeah, let's just immediately start selling ads, and Zuckerberg's like, no, it'll be uncool. We can't do that. You need to keep going.
Like and, fashion. Yeah. You, fashion?
So they have that exchange.
The Devil Wears Adidas is what this movie should have been called.
But there are some parallels, you know? Miranda Priestley, she's looked upon unfavorably, but I don't know who treats people worse. But they have the thing here where they cut away to Stanford because Eduardo's idea is that they need to get Palo Alto in on this.
Which is probably one of the smarter business decisions they make.
Yes, because that leads them to Sean Parker, who is sleeping with someone who was a French major. It's the
50 Shades of Grey girl.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Dakota Johnson.
Oh. Okay. Hi, Dakota. But they have...
Is your name Harvard?
No.
It's written on our underwear.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. What was your latest preneur? I enjoy the fact that her character is like, immediately rolls her eyes at the fact that he says he's an entrepreneur, so good job, guy. You're unemployed.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I did not know who founded Napster, and I don't know why this college girl does.
Okay.
Were you familiar with Sean Parker when Napster was around?
I thought it was the other guy who had the buzzed head, not the curly-haired guy. I was thinking of the other co-founder. Can't remember his name. There were two, since there were co-founders. I just think of the other ones.
Mm.
But I don't.
The movie where Seth Green plays a computer guy and he claims that Sean Parker stole Napster from him while he was taking a nap, and that's why he called it Napster? I feel like it was The Italian Job. Was that The Italian Job?
I didn't see The Italian Job. Did you see The Italian Job?
I think I did.
You saw The Italian Job?
It's with the Wahlberger guy.
Oh, it's with the Wahlberger guy? What Wahlberger guy? That Wahlberger? Anyway, so the thing where they introduce Sean and they have him do the snake thing and then she scolds him for the snake thing and they he's barely into it and he asks for permission to send email. And then he's
polite about it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're there doing that, do that thing. He does sort of weirdly say stuff about, like, you know, oh, I slept with the guy who invented Napster. She's like, you slept on the guy who invented Napster. It's like, oh, gross. Gross, Sean Parker. Icky. and then they had the...
You know, the worst part is I think the real Sean Parker said he wished he was as smooth as the character was in the movie.
Ugh. I can't imagine anyone being less smooth in this, but doing all of the same things, because that just sort of makes me lose faith in the human race as a species. Because there's something sort of there's a charm and charisma to JT here in the film that I don't think I could buy anyone else getting away with these behaviors.
No.
If they didn't have that charm and charisma.
No, but it's also amusing that he has this charm and charisma, and yet, like, sort of the running joke throughout the movie is that since he's being sued by everyone, he basically has zero money, and he just crashes at girls' houses because he doesn't have a place to live because he's poor.
It's called couch surfing. And somehow...
People in the Bay Area don't have houses big enough to have a couch and a bed area, so he has to share the bed.
I don't know how many couches he surfed to get to New York, but they meet after... Zuckerberg botches the advertising meetings because he's really interested to meet Sean Parker, so he actually takes this one seriously. And they meet with Christy Lee, and who's one of the fans they met earlier near the bathroom. In the Bill Gates lecture, I'm sorry, and then later on. But then they meet him at the sushi place, and I really like the music in the sushi place scene. It was interesting.
And elephant noises in it, I believe.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. And they have the exchange of cocktails where Sean Parker asks her what she wants, and sort of like wide-eyed, she doesn't know what to order, and she orders an appletini.
Yeah, and she's like 18, and she's in a bar, like, oh, crap, I need the name of a drink that they would serve at a bar, not just like random vodka or beer.
Yeah, appletini, easy on the teeny. So they get a round of appletinis. Fun fact I didn't know till the other day when I looked up the appletini Wikipedia page. I had to find out if what I had thought I had read one time about where they made it originally was true, and it wasn't. It wasn't originally invented at the Abbey. It was invented at Lola in West Hollywood. Anyway, different gay bar. But the thing was that Zuckerberg never had an appletini in the course of events leading up to and including this movie until the premiere of the film. And then he had an appletini, and he made it Facebook's official beverage. I don't know what bearing that has on pantry staples at the Facebook headquarters, but...
No, that probably means that there's some sort of vending machine type thing where you go put in a quarter and push a button and a martini glass comes out and gets filled up with green liquid.
Some wonderful top notch pucker, green apple pucker.
That's terrible. Just saying that word brings back horrible memories.
you could just feel the bile rise inside of your gullet. But so they have the exchange. I like how they shot the scene too, because they're also intercutting from what is essentially a bit of a party to a very dull courtroom scene. So you have to sort of carry this vibe back and forth as they discuss, you know, oh, well, what did you guys talk about? Well, we talked about this. And then we got to cut back to him talking and being like energized and stuff and engaging as Sean Parker. So I feel like they did that pretty well.
Yeah. The other thing I like about the intercutting, which is like when the look on both Mark and Eduardo's face in the boardroom, like even when they're trying to relay, like he's trying to clearly explain what the overwhelming feeling in the room was when Sean sort of steamrolled them, but like both of them had this look on their face like they're telling a story about where they had a one night stand or something. They both look thoroughly embarrassed at how, like, you know, won over, how in love they were after this meeting. You know, I mean, partly because Eduardo got like kicked to the curb, and Mark is just like, you know, he was completely won over, and just like, this is one of the instances where he loses all of his insecure armor and is just like, yep, I love you, we're gonna be partners now, for good or bad, which you know, a lot of bad later, but like he's just so wowed, and you can see it like later in the, you know, the intercut lawyer scene where he's just like has this look at his face like, yeah, that happened.
Yeah, well, I think the movie is definitely playing it up like he identifies with Sean Parker. The things that Sean Parker says appeal to him and his worldview about how you got to protect yourself and you got to watch out for people coming after you and you got to make sure they don't have private investigators following you and tapping your phones and digging up dirt on you. That is, if, even if it isn't true, they'll use against you. So,
which apparently applies to couch surfing guys who occasionally dabble in drugs, but these guys are like not really.
No,
really our thing, guys. We're all business over here.
No, but this appeals to Mark Zuckerberg in the film, and it doesn't appeal to Eduardo. And Eduardo is deeply suspicious of him, and there's this whole thing about the Marlin, and it just makes me cringe because there's no way they had that conversation. Like, 3,000 pound Marlin. Well, they just start arguing about the size of the Marlin. It's just like that's not. This isn't entertaining to me, but whatever. They have the they have their conversation in the cab when they're on the way, or his car on the way back from the thing, and they're talking to one another about the different things that they took away from the meeting, and how important California is, et cetera, and dropping the. And like that was his biggest contribution. And so they go to back to everyday life and whatever. And, I forget, is this when they cut away to rowing McRowersons over in England, jolly old England?
Yes, I believe it is. This is when we cut to, the David Fincher Tilt Shift music video.
Yes. It is, it is lovely and enchanting and has absolutely nothing to do with the film. And
it's so, just a little, it's a little palate cleanser to say, no, we're going to shift gears from all of the, you know, the buildup, like, you know, in terms of like, it's, again, it's a very weirdly structured movie, but like there are segments where it's like, you've got all of the things that led up to the idea of the Facebook. You've got the building of Facebook. You've got the back and forth with the Winklevoss. And then clearly, like, there's a relationship break there. And then they're off on their own. They're trying to make money. They're trying to grow their thing. They meet Sean Parker, and boom, they're off. Like, they're on their path next. It's like, now let's go see what happened to the other guys. And they're still doing their rowing thing in England.
Yeah.
And getting stomped on while all these other guys were, you know, doing their, you know, Palo Alto thing and making connections with VCs and whatnot. It's like, this is going to come back and blow up in their face.
Yep. So we get to briefly see some out of focus pre-Brexit England and
some rotoscoped post defocused stuff.
Are you somehow implying that that's not naturally how focus works in a lens?
I mean, there are tilt shift lenses where you could recreate something similar to a lot of the way this looks.
Not with the guy leaning out of the balcony thing and shouting over the river and the river being in focus with the stuff, like, no. You could try to do some diopter BS or to be like, you know, here's some deep focus Citizen Kane stuff, but no, that didn't happen.
It's possible. I've done some tilt shift stuff. You could do some crazy nonsense with it, but yeah.
Yeah, but also Instagram has a tilt shift filter, so.
No, that's not the same thing. There's no electronic filter that, like, physically shifts the glass element in front of your sensor.
I know. That was a joke.
I know. I was explaining it to the people.
Oh, you're explaining it to the people? What people? They're people?
I feel like after the opening scene, they chilled out with the talking fast.
I don't feel like they did.
To a certain extent. I mean, Zuckerberg is very keyed up throughout the whole movie.
And it pops up every now and then. And so they also come to the conclusion, well, Zuckerberg comes to the conclusion that he needs he needs money. He doesn't specify how much to go to California with some interns so that they can work on this.
But don't forget, like, again, aside from the goofy tilt shift music video, that is when the Winklevosses actually decide that they are going to pursue federal legal action against them.
Yeah, and they're wearing their silly little crimson blazers.
They're racing outfit. That's what you do. You wear the racing outfit.
I don't think they race in the crimson blazers. That was your post-race cool-down outfit.
When you're talking to Prince Edward or whatever his name is.
I thought it was Albert.
Sure, there you go.
Okay.
Prince Albert again. He wasn't in a cab.
And they also talked to the dad who had been alluded to a few times, and then also the head coach of the other team, and he's all like, oh yes, you know, Cambridge. And so they
yes, and that's also how they learned that Facebook has crossed the ocean and is now in England.
Yeah.
Makes them feel real bad.
Yeah, because they wasted all their time with Larry Summers. And so we skipped over that scene. But yeah,
that's a great scene where they're actually talking to the head of the college, and he basically tells them to piss off because, like, this is too petty for me to get involved in. And, you know, he's very dismissive, like, you know, you can't tell us that our thing's not going to be worth millions of dollars. Like, well, I was the treasury secretary. I can make some sort of estimated guess. And I think, I believe they said that actual guy saw this movie and said, yeah, I probably said all that. That's probably about how I would have reacted if somebody would have come into my office and said something like that.
Yeah, well, it's fun in two ways, in that he incorrectly predicts the value of this company. And he also sort of correctly sums up the position that the twin brothers have, in that they feel aggrieved for something when they should probably not be focusing so much on this because it's not really going to pan out well for them. They do wind up getting some cash out of this from suing.
Yeah, according to the title at the end there, they got $65 million.
It's called a burn-in. So they
And shortly after this movie came out, I think there was an additional lawsuit because they sued claiming Facebook intentionally undervalued themselves just so that the percentage that they got was not high enough. But I don't think they actually won that one.
No. Yeah, they didn't. No. So, but I mean, they're doing well enough. Like, they're not billionaires, but they'll survive. Poor guys. And they, have this whole thing with breaking the door for the 335-year-old building, which is nice. But back to jolly old...
Like one of my favorite lines also. You know, this building is 100 years older than the country it's in, so do be careful. And he says, we're sitting in chairs.
Yeah.
I love that line so much. I say it frequently.
Okay. Is that why your chair creaks? Because it's a 335-year-old chair?
No. Also, I'm not sitting anymore. I had to stand up. It's too hot.
Oh, okay.
By the way, I caught a large portion of a movie called Lucy, by the way.
Yikes.
Yeah. But she sits in my chair in that movie.
Oh, specifically your chair?
Yeah, my chair. It's black, but I have the gray one, but it's my chair.
Okay.
I have that clicks.
What is your / Lucy's chair?
Well, it's not hers. It was in a lab or something in the movie.
Okay.
But, it's,
all right.
It's,
so what's the your / Lucy's, the lab's, monster's, doctor's chair?
/ Marco's chair. Mm-hmm. It's the Herman Miller Embody.
Ah. I never liked that one. I like the Aeron.
No, that one feels weird. I don't like the Aeron.
I like the Aeron because of the mesh.
No, I don't like the mesh.
I like the mesh.
It's not supportive.
I like the mesh. It's supportive.
No, it's not supportive. It doesn't go up high enough. It's very short.
There's the airflow. I like the airflow. You like the airflow? You like the airflow. No, but they have the whole thing where he goes out and he sets up at Stanford and they ruin a house. It is 500,000% all of the source material for Silicon Valley season one.
It is. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, that is definitely the thing. They're coding and they're wired in, man. I don't know why they made such a big deal out of that, coming with that terminology for the film to have in these, like, what, 3-4 times they mention it. It's not a major plot point. They could just say, you know, they're in the zone or something. It doesn't need to be.
Man.
It doesn't need to be a big deal, but I kind of get the feeling like they wanted to say he's wired in, man, and they wanted to bring it up here in this first scene because they want to have he's wired in be an excuse for the later scene, but ugh, whatever. They wreck part of a chimney, and coincidentally, Sean Parker, who is definitely not stalking them, is sleeping over at a lady's place who lives across the street, who also happens to be a model.
Sharon.
Yeah.
That's his Sharon. No, that's that's a different girl than the model later.
Oh.
It's just Sharon.
Okay.
Who can't catch a beer.
Yeah. Well, twice. But I feel, I mean, I feel bad for her catching beers. I would probably drop it. I don't want people throwing glass at me.
But that scene is also great in another sense that, you know, he basically looks around and goes, yes, this house is awesome. It's a startup. It's what's happening. It's awesome. And then he goes, oh, Eduardo's not here. He's like, yeah, he didn't come out. And they make like the most bashful, like lovey-dovey eyes at each other like four different times. And,
well, this is his affair. His romantic
right, exactly.
affair.
You can see Eisenberg, like, he's trying to, like, look. He's, like, trying to not look at him because he knows he's blushing and smiling. He's like, no, don't look at him. He'll know. He'll know. But he can't help it.
Yeah. Well, he's only got Eisenbergs for Sean Parker. did I kill you? You okay, Dan?
I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one.
Okay, so they set up this arrangement where they're apparently going to let him crash over there and come up with all of his amazing ideas. And they go through this process of working it, doing the stuff. And then eventually Eduardo shows up in the rain. And he wasn't picked up from the thing, and Sean Parker is deeply embedded in the operation at this point, so much so that it would be surprising to anyone who just happened to show up and was also technically a co-founder of the company who had just been away for a couple months, that everything is just sort of spiraled out of control.
Yeah. And rather than waste any dialogue on the random conversation he's having on the phone while he's stirring guacamole for 5 minutes, he's telling a story about how he saw Mitchell Manningham, the VC, who screwed him over at the Case Equity thing. So he's totally going to get back at him, which totally comes back later when they play their pajama prank on Case Equity, which is apparently a true story. By the way,
yeah, that was pretty cool there. I got the feeling that it was sort of like the older brother telling the younger brother to do something, and the younger brother wanted to like really impress the older brother.
Oh, absolutely. But like again, this is the thing. Like you've got this like insecure kid who's now in a position of power, and now he's got, you know, $500,000 VC funding to do his little thing at this like house with all of these college kids where they're just getting drunk and high and writing code and changing the world and stuff. And it's like, you can see how quickly he would spiral out of control without adult supervision. And this is kind of the world that he's in. Like when Sean Parker is the adult, well, the fake Sean Parker in this movie is the adult in the room. Clearly things are going to get a little weird.
Yep. And it does. 'Cause they have their conversation about it, and it's basically like the husband has just shown up from a long trip to find the wife has settled in with a new girlfriend, and it's very very strange. They have the exchange back and forth about his involvement in the company, which just makes Eduardo very upset.
Mark, with his inability to filter the things he's saying, says something like, if you don't come out here, you're going to get left behind, which sort of adds to Eduardo's feeling of being abandoned in the rain at the airport, sadly.
Yeah, and then he feels like the company is really like leaving him behind, but he is why the company exists, so he's also quite resentful. Yes. This sort of resentful one might go to a bank teller for. But he first goes
freezes
back...
the accounts.
He first goes back to New York, and he gets in and goes immediately to bed. There is someone who enters the apartment, and it is Christy Lee, who we have not seen in a little bit. And she is unhappy that he got back, and she's interrogating him about when he got back and his relationship status on Facebook, because that is a big deal to her as somewhat of a Facebook groupie, according to Eduardo, when they first met. And
she is full-blown jealous girlfriend stereotype here, saying you're not changing your Facebook status so you can hook up with chicks in California, because that's really how it works. And
well, it's also totally how it works time-wise. It was quite an investment for him to go over to California and
yes.
immediately back.
He tries to be nice, even though like he just turned off his phone when he got back. He gives her a present, which is a scarf, which she says, I don't wear scarves, are you crazy? And sets it on fire and throws it in the trash can while he's on the phone with Mark.
The good part about that is the setting it on fire out of focus in the background while he's on the phone.
Yeah.
Because it builds. And then you cut away to that, and he tries to put it out, and it somewhat ruins the phone call that they were having. Now, I don't know if this is a fair characterization of Christy Lee. I don't know if Christy Lee is a real person. It's just weird. It's very weird to do the jealous girlfriend thing in here. I think there are a number of other methods that could have been used if you didn't need to adhere strictly to the truth.
Well, I mean, you saw, you know, her entire job in the meeting Sean Parker scene was to give side eye at Eduardo going like, high priced escorts and tap your phone and all kinds of, she's like, this is too big. Like, I'm going to, you know, she's already like worried about the relationship in that scene. And clearly her imagination has run away with her and she's just paranoid about all of this stuff. And, you know, a little unbalanced in the way she goes from setting things on fire and being angry to quickly being all soft and sad. Like, what? You're going back already? Like, you just got back. Why? I've missed you so much.
It's weird.
It's weird.
It's very weird. Because, you know, this movie doesn't have to stick to the truth. And even if that was the truth, it could have been anything else. So it comes off more as like an Aaron Sorkin problem with women kind of a thing than anything else.
Well, yes, but it's enough motivation for him to break up with her, aside from the fact that he had the conversation with Mark where he's very angry that he froze the bank accounts, but it doesn't matter because Peter Thiel invested $500,000. So
Peter Thiel is the CSI guy.
Yeah. When I hear the name Peter Thiel, honestly, I see this guy's face because I've seen this guy's face more often than I've seen Peter Thiel's actual face.
I totally forgot about CSI guy or Peter Thiel in the movie. but I had been, you know, reading about Peter Thiel because he had been in the news recently for a number of unsavory things that he's been doing. So
apparently his office is in the building where they shot Towering Inferno.
Okay.
to this movie.
Yeah.
It's very comforting.
Yes. Yeah. Remember a disaster movie, Stan?
No.
But this wasn't this wasn't a disaster movie. And certainly, nothing like, you know, a computer catching on fire, that would have been a disaster. But they have the thing where he's like going to go back and help out and do the stuff, but sign the papers. And that's
they
not good.
They incorporate. There's a new stock structure.
Mm-hmm.
He's a rich man. He's got a 34% ownership of the company, which is more now because they might have to reduce it down later because new investors and stuff.
Yeah. Because he trusts his friend, Mark Zuckerberg, not to screw him after all he's given him.
Basically, at this point in the movie, they're like, look, we did it. We got offices, we got money, we got all this stuff. We're doing well. And, you know, we're going to glide for a while. And I'm going to go back to school for a semester or two. And Mark, he's just going to stay here. So he's going to take a little bit of time off. But I'll come back because, you know, we're doing well. And we're going to have a celebration when we hit 1 million members. So I got to come back for that. But I got to go back to school for now.
Yeah.
And then it all goes off the rails for poor Eduardo.
Yeah, poor Eduardo. I think the only person that I kind of pity in the film is Eduardo. I don't even pity Mark Zuckerberg, but Eduardo, I feel like the company would not have been as successful as it was with him involved, but the company also would not have been successful without him. So it's not easy to come to the conclusion that he is owed nothing, or some paltry sum, or to be quickly brushed aside in a sort of careless manner, or in sort of the brusque manner in which Sean Parker decides to pursue.
I think that is the sentiment you're sort of seeing through Mark throughout this, where he's like, he's thankful and he's business partners with Eduardo and he doesn't super acknowledge it all the time, but at the same time, he like kind of resents how much more effort he put into the company than Eduardo, but like, you know, that should be reflected in the fact that he's CEO and he owns more of the company. But, you know, his being drawn to the dark side of Sean Parkerville / Eduardo not being around as much and, you know, a little bit of the resentment there, I think that really just sort of, that's what helps drive the wedge between them and eventually why he's okay with cutting him out of the whole thing and devaluing his stock and being a big old jerk, because you can see that their relationship, like, you know, the thing about this movie that I guess you don't have to see it, like friendships are friendships or whatever, and people don't really necessarily have friends.
Oh, friendship is magic.
Yeah, well, Yeah, people have different types of friends for different reasons or whatever, but it's hard to really see the actual camaraderie between them, aside from the fact that in the beginning there, Eduardo showed up when his friend broke up with his girlfriend in his time of need. But like, there's not a ton to really insinuate that they have a super close relationship. So you can tell that, you know, if there was something between them, it could go badly very quickly. And I think that is kind of what happens here. I'm just a little bummed out that there's not a little bit more backstory or just a hint to the relationship that they have between each other.
Well, I mean, there's some of that, especially with the chicken stuff, where it seems that that Zuckerberg is somewhat, he tries to console him on that. Of course, we do find out later on that it does appear that Mark Zuckerberg probably leaked that to the newspaper. So you might just feel bad.
I don't believe that. Like, you know, yeah. He genuinely says it wasn't me, and I believe him. Like, there's an honest performance, at least, where he says it wasn't me, but whatever.
Yeah. But they used to be friends, enough so that they could be relied on financially and also in terms of support, and that his name would be on the masthead of the thing. But yeah,
he went to his friend because that's who he wanted to work with. But your friend's suing you for $600 million. I didn't know that. Tell me more, which is another great line. But yeah, there's some line in there. It's just like, it, you know, when they're together, I don't really super feel the friendship, which is weird though, because like, I know they spent a lot of time together on set, like actually becoming friends in order to sort of help them as they act, but I don't see it as much as I would like.
Yeah, well, you know when a friend goes off somewhere else and then a distance comes between you and that friend, and then you don't talk to that friend as much, and then all of a sudden you guys like fade out and then you sort of connect over Facebook later. I feel like that kind of happens here. Like, we're coming in on their relationship where it had already been established that they were friends prior to this. It wasn't like them becoming friends. We don't see that. But we see their friendship unravel through this process. And a lot of that has to do with Eduardo and Mark being physically separate from one another, and also separate in the tasks that they're doing and their interests. And they pull apart here, you know? Like, he's not involved in the day-to-day, but he, you know, still deserves a certain percentage of a company. And then there's the whole share dilution thing where he gets screwed over. And Mark doesn't even have the courage to really be involved in any of that when it occurs. And he just sits over there with his headphones on. I don't know if he honestly had no idea it was happening in the next room, but he had personally invited Eduardo over there for this party. And then it turns out to be anything but, and you know, Eduardo's feeling pretty hurt about that and wrecks his laptop. And there's a good exchange here between the two of them. And then Sean Parker butts in with his Sean Parkeriness, and, he is unpleasant, and no one is rooting for Sean Parker at this point in the film.
Which is why it's great when he does that, like, fake throw a punch at him and Sean Parker flinches, and he says, I like standing next to you because it makes me look tough. Like, you're like, yeah, that's, yeah. I like that. That was good. That worked.
Yeah. And you know, there's the great line that he it's not going to be 30%. I'm going to come after you for it all. And Zuckerberg genuinely looks a little scared. In this, Eisenberg seems a little scared. And we go to the next scene of certain party that is unfolding with the intern that he sort of fancied, which is kind of creepy and gross, whatever. But they...
Especially because you think about all this, like, pretty much everyone involved in the company is, like, actively in college, except Sean Parker, who is... I don't know how old Sean Parker is.
I have no idea, but I would say that he is probably 10 years older than everybody who's in the film. But
about 10 years older, but I mean, he's clearly the senior member, but like, he's, you know.
Well, he was 20 with Napster, right? I mean, like 18 or 19 with Napster, and then like 20 something with the other company that came after Napster. Mm-hmm. And so he's not like terribly old, but those were not terribly young companies compared to Facebook. So he's probably a 10-year difference, 8 or 10-year difference. But the it's still creepy, gross, bosses and whatnot. And so there's the party, and the police come to bust it up. And oh no, They were doing asthma medication. And
I mean, you know, yeah. Sorority college party kids doing their cocaines off of other people's. And he's got his EpiPen and his inhaler, and he's caught white-handed trying to mop up his mess. But, you know, basically it just serves to show his, like, you know, while he is rambling off talking about, you know, photo sharing and how that's going to change social networks, which is totally a thing that happened, it shows his sort of carelessness at the same time of his personality and just how he's in this bad situation with bad things going on around him. And he's just, you know, minding his own business, doesn't really care, whatever. But then, you know, the cops ruin his party, and he calls Mark to say, hey, let him know what happened. And he's like, it's not a big deal. It was just a party. And Mark's like, well, it's totally a big deal. You own a large portion of this company, and you just got caught hooking up with interns with cocaine and stuff. So don't do that. And I'm going to have to go play damage control, because apparently now I have to be the adult. We thought you were the one who had all this wisdom who was going to guide us. And now apparently it's just me at the top of the company by myself, alone in the office, staring at these silly business cards that I ordered that were that phrase that you told me to do. So I should be all sassy. And now I'm super embarrassed that I ever thought you were on my level and we were partners in crime or whatever.
Yeah. One of the things I like about the direction of this scene is the way that Fincher framed the shot on the phone call that Zuckerberg is taking, and over his shoulder are the, there's sort of like a lit office space area in the back behind him, and the lights turn off because it's late and everybody's going home. But it's also a metaphor for what's happening, because, like, you know, he's losing another part of a support system for himself, and that he is even more alone. So anyway, lights, kids, look it up. And the,
it's also, at the party scene there when he finally snaps out of his little ramble and goes over to the door and opens it up to see the police. That's the one handheld shot in the movie for, Fincher nerds who want trivia.
Oh, is that like a big deal?
You know, there was that big stupid video about how he doesn't move his cameras and stuff, and how it's all like static wide shots and dollies and stuff, and he doesn't do handheld moves. There's one handheld camera move in this movie, and that's it.
Oh.
Just one.
Okay.
He doesn't like handheld.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm so used to seeing handheld shots in situations that would be better served by other shots that I mostly don't care, but...
Yeah, I think what he mostly objects to is the objective versus the subjective camera. Like, he just wants to be presenting the frame rather than like trying to put you in the action and shaky cam and all that stuff. Like, that's not his style.
Yeah, well, there's no action to put you in, so it'd be kind of ludicrous in the scenario. But the
in most scenarios where you have people talking and there's politicking and backstabbing and that kind of stuff, yeah, it's out of place, which is mostly what his movies are about. They're about people doing things and talking.
Yeah, but could you imagine Peter Berg doing this movie? And like,
I don't want to.
all those scenes where they're in the conference room, everybody would be like pacing around the table, and the camera would be like, you know, handheld, just zooming in, smashing in. They'd crank it weird. It'd be amazing, really. And then all of a sudden, something would explode in the background. Peter Berg.
Yeah, a lot of really tight to the eye line over the shoulders and stuff. Anyway.
Yeah. So.
I like the, you know, since you mentioned like action and the deposition scenes, like one of my favorite parts of that is where he finally throws the sass back at Divya, where he says, you know, I can't wait to stand over you and watch you write us a check. And he says, yeah, of course, because that's why you're here. But like, I like that in that particular scene, Eduardo's over in the corner, like pouring a glass of water. And there's a nice angle on him where he just sort of turns over and goes like, what are you doing? Like, you've completely lost your composure and you're like shouting at these people, basically talking down to them. And it's actually the most action-packed portion of the deposition stuff, and I find it amusing.
Action-packed depositions, that's what we came for.
Action-packed depositions. Lawyer
boom,
man.
Boom, boom, boom. Choo-choo-choo. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
I actually really like the lawyers, too, because they're really lawyery and smarmy and both just sort of like, you know, whatever, like these kids with their billion-dollar companies. It's just, I have no stake in this. It's just everyday stuff. La-di-da.
Well, what I like about them is the lawyery cadence that they have. When they're reading things and when they're talking to one another, there is a certain cadence, especially when they're reciting the emails and talking through the depositions and asking each other questions. Like, there is a certain courtroom composure to them that I find believable. And so they're not big name actors that you've seen everywhere all over the place. Like, they didn't hire Robert Downey Jr. to be one of the lawyers. They hired the people who would be best suited at blending into this job and being these lawyers. And I think it was a good decision because I like them. They're both good. Yeah. I don't know who any of them are, either of them are, but good for them.
Yeah. Also, I don't think Robert Downey Jr. wants to work with Fincher after Zodiac.
Oh, I wouldn't know. Again, I didn't see it.
He did a lot of takes, apparently.
He doesn't like the takes?
No.
I thought actors love takes.
No, there's a story that he was so annoyed by the digital multiple takes where they couldn't take a break and he kept doing it over and over again that he was peeing in, beer bottles or something in one scene and leaving them around the set in protest?
Well, that is a protest. That is a form of protest. Yeah.
Anyway, the lawyers are great. They get some great lines, especially when Mark's lawyer who is the actor? Because, Divi was rattling off all of the important people that were at Harvard, which the actor, by the way, was Natalie Portman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. Padme Amidala.
Yeah. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Annie? Little Annie?
Eduardo could have been Anakin.
No, oh, really? Was he up for that? I don't think so.
No, I mean, he's a little young, but I could see him playing that role.
Yeah, well, he played Spider-Man.
Oh, yes, A Boy Named Boom corrects us. He was peeing in mason jars.
Were they literal mason jars, or were they ball jars, which are not the same as the mason label? Anyway, I don't care.
Oh, dear.
Please don't throw any of those at me. But this is interesting. In that we finally see the tension in the film come to a head with the resolution of these arbitration scenes. They don't resolve them on screen so much as they have a scene with Zuckerberg and Rashida Jones. And she talks through how they're totally going to settle because, are you kidding? Would you look at you like in a court? Like you would be terrible.
Yeah. She's also the analog for the audience in that one part where when we get to the, We see the whole dealings with Eduardo and Mark, but when he rattles off, the stock dilution and he gets to his 0.03% or whatever, and she has that sort of sad look on her face, oh, you didn't have to do that. Did you really do that? And it's just yep, he did. And then she's there at the end to sort of break the ice and say, look, in the very beginning, when she introduced herself that first time and offered him some salad,
That wasn't the first time you saw her. That was after the first couple depositions. She was in those scenes.
Right. In one of the original, the first deposition with, I guess it was Eduardo's lawyer, he was saying something if I know that you can make me look like a jerk, I'll be more inclined to settle. When they're talking about the Erica scene in the very first deposition, it's that whole thing actually was true and comes back at the very end where Rashida Jones basically goes, yeah, you're unlikable. The jury's not going to side with you because you're a jerk and, you have this sort of awkward, hunched manner and you don't smile and you look angry all the time. And it would be pretty easy to convict you because even just circumstantial stuff and, why weren't you at the party? And did you try to get Sean out of the company so you could have his shares too? You already stabbed Eduardo in the back. Maybe you're going to do it to him too. She can cast enough doubt in 5 seconds that he goes, yep, I guess we're going to settle and sign our NDAs and go about our business. And then I'm going to be the CEO at the head of the company with zero friends all alone again, but I got what I wanted, right? Isn't this what I wanted all along, to be alone and running my company with power?
All the time in the world.
he got his wish from the beginning of the movie where he's powerful and he's got his better life, the Final Club wish. But the thing about the Final Club that he missed was all of the brotherhood and camaraderie and the things that go along with, being part of a Final Club is, the people. He cast all that aside. He created his own power structure where he is at the top. He is the president of his own Final Club, but he has no friends to share it with. So
monkey spa.
No,
that's not how that works. Careful what you wish for.
He made a wish on a monkey's paw, and now he owns Facebook. Boom.
Careful what you poke for.
Remember poking?
Oh, God. It was so infuriating.
And super poking. Isn't that both of those are still a thing, I think, in there somewhere.
They are? I thought super poking was some third-party thing that they tried to, some developer made with ads and stuff injected into it.
It may be. Who knows?
Whatever. It's all garbage. I don't even open the thing. Every now and then, they send me emails that I have to opt out of again. Because the important thing about Facebook is that you opt out of emails. But that's not featured in the film. But I like the scene with him and Rashida Jones. I almost wish they had just ended it on that, and that they hadn't extended it into, oh, Erica, Erica, be my friend, Erica.
He had this deposition thing where they kind of like break him out of his mold, going like, you don't have to be this guy just to be in charge of the company and to, you know, this struggle for power. And like, let's rewind all the way to the beginning of how you got here. And it's like, yeah, remember that moment where you were super defensive and fighting for everything with Erica? Let's wrap that up in a nice bow and say, like, let's start making amends from step one. And he goes to Erica's page and requests to be her friend and keeps hitting the refresh, which you would think like the CEO of Facebook can just like be friends with whoever he wants to, because like he owns Facebook and he just like he could do it. But no, he actually requests it politely.
Yep. Those were the days, my friends.
What were the days?
The days that never end.
You think he actually uses Facebook?
No. I mean, I'm sure he does in like a way, but not like how normal people use it. I mean, you can't. You fundamentally cannot use it like a normal person uses it. I mean, maybe he has like little people, like he makes like fake personalities, like Juan Ramirez. And he has like,
I mean, he has an account. Do you think he has like a press person who like posts stuff on his page for him? Like, hey, here's an article about our company doing good stuff.
I don't think he has somebody post on his behalf on his account. I think he probably takes things that other people hand him and then looks it over and then posts it, would be my assessment. And that would be for not just reasons of him spending his time typing those things, but also for reasons of him, you know, legally accidentally saying something. Because also there are like SEC violations that you can make over Facebook if you talk about certain things that you're investing in, whatever. But yeah, whatever. I mean, the actual Mark Zuckerberg, the person, totally different from Jesse Eisenberg, Mark Zuckerberg in this film.
Well, that's so, totally different. There are the one moment I said the line that he actually said was, you know, when he was being grilled by the Winklevoss's lawyer and he said, was that a question? And just sort of like stares him down. That's an actual line he said in an interview. I don't know if you ever saw that. There's like I feel like it was a 60 Minutes thing or something where he had an interview that went horribly wrong and he was super like sweaty and like robotic and awkward. And they try to break the ice with like, hey, you know, instead of the Google guys, you're the new like new big guy on the block, and just staring at him, he just goes, is that a question? In a very awkward fashion. And then like, you know, they were nice enough to revisit him with another 60 Minutes thing later, and they were talking about, oh, he's so much more open and warm and honest now, and he's doing his best to be, you know, a young 20 something at the top of a huge company and be an open person at the same time. I was like, oh, okay. A little bit of a red flag, but sure. Yeah. I believe you.
Well, one of the things that I'm thankful for is that David Fincher and Jesse Eisenberg chose not to copy the copious amounts of sweat. Because I feel like while that might have lent it some authenticity, that was definitely an area where you could take some artistic license.
Yeah, they left it out of the movie, and it's all in my shirt.
Ew. It's not that hot here right now. It actually cooled off just a little bit. That enormous heat wave that was here for like 3 weeks seems to have broken.
Only 95 outside right now here.
Oh, only.
It's probably hotter in this office than it is outside.
Yeah. Oh. You should post about that on Facebook.
On LiveJournal? I never had a LiveJournal. Do you have a LiveJournal?
I did. It is deleted.
Is LiveJournal still a thing?
Russian investors bought it because it was huge in Russia, even when it was no longer popular here. I'm not kidding. This is not a joke. Totally serious. And also, I think Zanga is still alive somewhere else, but not in the United States.
I don't know what that is.
This was just basically like a cooler upstart that came along after LiveJournal was around. Whatever. The only reason to go on LiveJournal is to look at George R. Martin's blog posts, which are suitably weird, in that he always puts like the little mood field where you can like enter some sort of a mood you're feeling. It's very peculiar.
Mm. Mm-hmm. One thing I appreciated about his live journal posts is that they bothered to put the spell correct squiggly line under the word Facebook when he's typing it, because it wasn't a word back then.
Yeah. Well, it was a word on Harvard campuses. Harvard.
Yes. It's a
Harvard
thing
Yard.
Colleges.
Yes.
Back when they used to have actual books of people's faces, but
Ivy League. No. But
A lot of good screen comps in this
quite.
Movie. Right? They're not bad. There are a few that are less than perfect, but a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I mean, I like them better than the CG breath crap. And the snow really bothers me. I have to say, if I'm breaking down the effects in this, twins, very good. The screen comps, good. The breath stuff, not as good. And the snow, worst in the film.
Oh, you mean the falling snow is what
you're
talking
about,
right?
Yeah, the falling snow.
Okay, because the snow on the ground was practical fake snow.
I could see that. But the ones that are falling in the air are total phony baloney. And you can see that when you're watching it. So I don't appreciate them.
A little bit of atmosphere.
A little too much.
You're a little too much.
Your face is a little too much. Your Facebook is a little too much.
It's actually very sparse. I don't use it very often.
Oh, yeah. Samesies. Also, please, I would like to stipulate at the end of this episode, if at any point along hearing the two of us talk about Facebook, you were like, you know what? I'm going to be friends with Dan and Joe on Facebook because I think they'd be hilarious. Don't.
No, don't do that.
I will not approve your friend request. It will not happen. And I will just get spam email and I will be very cross with you.
I might approve it, but we will never interact on Facebook because I don't. Didn't do that.
Seriously, just follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, go on Twitter. We talk to people all the time there. We like talking on Twitter.
Yeah. 140 characters or less, or your pizza's free.
Ever since they killed the paper app and I have to use the real app now, I it's so like weirdly nested and dense that I can't even tell what I'm looking at. Like somebody shared a thing or put a comment, but it's down here underneath the nested thing that's inside of a nested thing. It's like, it's completely inscrutable. It is the worst app I have ever opened. It's worse than Snapchat. I understand Snapchat.
Well, I don't understand this Snapchat 100%, and it's actually been probably a year since I opened it, so I'm sure it's a whole other array of monkeys. But every time I open Facebook, they change the whole entire thing, and I have no idea where anything is. And they also change the context of certain notifications so that you'll get little red badges all over the place, and you'll be like, what the bleep is that thing, because you have no idea what it is, and then you click on it and you're just like, how is that a notification? It's like, so and so is talking about this topic, and it's like, so good for them. Like, what, why would I care?
Yeah, and then, of course you can turn stuff off like that, but like the one that gets me is like Paperhead integrated messaging, but now you have to have the Messenger app if you're going to use the main app. The Messenger app has a badge on it if you don't allow notifications.
Yes.
What in the hell?
Yeah. See, I went through that because a instructor from school asked me to help out with helping sort of students with questions, et cetera, for their final senior year stuff. And they didn't really ask me many questions, but we'll leave that for another time. But she couldn't reach me on LinkedIn, so then she went to the fallback of sending me a message on Facebook Messenger. So then I was like, oh, God. And I opened the Facebook app on my iPhone, and it's like, no, you can't check the messages that I'm showing you notifications for. Would you like to download the Facebook Messenger app? And I was just like, and I had to.
That's why I like paper. It had those weird little like circles that on the Facebook phone where you could like put them anywhere on the screen and then click on them and it would be the message thread. It had that weird interface still, and it was super useful comparatively.
It just, everything about it just drove me up the wall. Because it's like,
not good.
You need to have notifications on. It was just like, I don't want it from you. And it's like, do you want to integrate with your contacts? And I was like, I don't want that either. Like, I want nothing from you. Just let me talk to this person who I briefly want to talk to and then never use this application again. And then, of course, like you said, it put the badge on it. And then I was just like, hello, settings. Hello, badge disable. There you go. Now you're gone. Your privileges have been revoked. I mean, but even like Uber and Lyft abuse their ability to notify you of deals, which Just burn it all, Dan. I mean, Silicon Valley is just a cesspool at this point. Remember in A View to a Kill, which came out very many years before this, the bad guy was Christopher Walken, and he was a genetically, well, sort of a eugenics, a product of a Nazi eugenics program where he was supposed to be the super person or something, and then that failed, and he went to Paris and raced horses, and then he had a Zeppelin that he took to San Francisco so that he could flood Silicon Valley with water and destroy the American tech sector. A View to a Kill is a very strange movie. So maybe we should do his crazy plan and just flood the valley.
Or we could just put some people in charge who are slightly more stable. I mean, but again, this is what happens when your guiding folks are Sean Parker and Peter Thiel.
Yeah.
Sorry, the characters of them. I have no idea what they're actually like in real life.
I think they're like the
characters. Well, we have a little bit of an idea of what Peter Thiel's like in real life.
Yeah, something, something, lawsuits, something. Trump. But they also don't have good beer up there in the Bay Area. What do they got? They got Anchor Steam. Like, I'm having a Cali Creamin' from San Diego, and I was like, you know, California represent. That's what I was thinking when I poured that. But
it's all about artisanal 20-year-old bourbon there.
That's not a San Francisco treat, if you ask me.
Well, you take it back, because I love the Bay Area in spite of the fact that it's full of crazy people.
It's gross. I mean, it was nice being there for a little bit for some contexts of being there.
You got Napa up there? Come on. It's a little further away, but it's close.
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough. It's in the orbit of Smarmy around San Francisco.
It's in the fallout zone. It would be part of the zone of exclusion if San Francisco were to go nuclear.
Well, that's a pleasant thought.
I meant it metaphorically, of course.
Yes. But they'd be safe from the flood. So, you know, look on the bright side.
It's a nuclear tech bubble.
Uh-huh. Water bubble.
I love this movie. I've watched it many times. Somewhere around halfway, I almost always like lose my ability to judge like how scenes flow together and how things are working, and I just get sucked into the movie and the drama of it all because the performances are great, the directing, the writing. Everybody on this movie brought their A game and did a great job, and I love it so much.
It could be worse. It's fine. I really. Honestly,
but I didn't say it was great, by the way. I said I love it.
Okay. This is my thing. Is like, I don't love it, but I feel like that is a personal thing where I just don't have the deep affection for it, and not necessarily like a judgment on the film itself. Because I think that there are a great number of technical things that the movie does very well, and I think there are a number of artistic things that the movie does exceptionally well with weaving these different storylines together in a very coherent and interesting way, which I think would challenge many other writers and directors. I just find some of the dialogue objectionable, and some of the scenes and staging can be a little weird. Like here's our rowing crew scene, and it's cool, but what does it have to do with anything? Doesn't. So, you know, there's that.
He wanted to do it.
Yeah, well, he got to do it. Row, row, row your boat. Gently mm-hmm. into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Merrily, merrily, merrily.
Life is but a deposition.
I was going to go with stream, but that works.
And again, it's worth just saying again, like, this movie is based on the book written from the perspective of Eduardo, which is interesting when you consider all of the pieces that he's not involved in.
Yes. Also, from the perspective of Eduardo, filtered through Eduardo via this process where he also probably can't say many of the things that...
Mm-hmm.
So then it's just like, okay, well, sure. So, I mean, as far as like factual things about the tech industry, no. But it's still like interesting. I haven't seen the Aaron Sorkin Steve Jobs movie.
Neither have I.
Oh, really? Is that because your boy didn't direct it?
I would have been more on board if he did.
Uh-huh.
No, it's mostly just because it slipped past me at the time.
Oh.
I think, wasn't that somewhat concurrent with The Revenant? I think The Revenant just kind of turned me off from seeing movies for a little while.
I think it was a couple months prior to that. But yeah, Steve, I didn't want to seek out Steve Jobs either. But I'm kind of curious if he's just like, The iPad. Who knows?
I'll watch it when it's on HBO, but I think it's going to be one of those ones that the storyifying of real events is going to be far more grating than they were in this movie, because nobody really was that aware of Zuckerberg before this movie came out, or his persona or his backstory. And we were all kind of there watching these live keynote events of Steve, which are the center of that movie, and we know a lot more about Apple and stuff. So I think that's going to be a little harder to swallow.
Yeah, tough to row that one. But so yay, we're done!
Hooray! Best movie ever.
No, it's fine.
It's not the best movie ever, but it's one of my favorites.
Yay!
Hooray! Great score.
Like,
babe,
Facebook me.